Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now we're joined by the writer Garrett Kaiser, contributing editor to Harper's Magazine and contributing writer to Mother Jones. His new book is simply entitled Privacy, and it's a collection of essays on the idea of privacy in our lives, how it's defined, where it comes from, why it's valuable, why it's under threat. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me on.
This is not a typical book on privacy, I should say. It's much wider in scope than the descriptions of how privacy was being eroded for the sake of national security, which we kept hearing about in the Bush administration, or how exposed we are to consumer marketing, which we keep talking about with respect to the internet. What are you hoping to achieve with your essays on privacy?
Well, first of all, causing people to reflect on how much they might value privacy in their own lives and the degree to which they may have taken it for granted, the degree to which they may have accepted the fatalistic notion that certain key values are being eroded, that there's nothing we can do about that, and we might as well just go with the flow. And finally, that they see privacy against the background of some broader issues.
Why as a values question?
Well, when I hear values, I think of something that I care about enough to fight for, that I care about enough to resist. And indeed, I locate the right to privacy in the same visceral roots where the creaturely impulse to resist resides. So to consider privacy as something that when forces arrayed against you arise, that you don't immediately leave it in the house to burn.
What aspects of your privacy do you experience as so under threat?
Well, a number of them. Access to personal information, the ability to regulate access to the self, which is the way that some people would define privacy. And I see it under threat from multiple sources, certainly the government, and certainly certain commercial interests that data mine, and certain cultural mores, which I have no objection to in themselves. I object to them when they're applied in some kind of totalitarian way that says, since I do this sort of thing, you need to do it too. Or more specifically, if you want a job here, you better have a Facebook page. But not least of all, as I say, in certain personal aspects by which we might be ready to surrender for the sake of convenience, which I see as a threat as well.
Let me play you a clip that articulates almost an entire opposite point of view, I think. And I guess this comes from the intersection of what you just call commercial interests and changing cultural mores. And it's the founder of Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg. We don't have it? Oh, okay. So we'll get that up in a minute. But in the same vein, you begin the book with a question, which is, does anything say so much about the times we live in as the fact that the word sharing has almost everything to do with personal information and almost nothing to do with personal wealth? You write that these two ideas, personal information and personal wealth, are connected. Could you explain the link?
Well, the main link that I'm trying to draw attention to is between privacy, which I think we tend to regard as an altogether personal thing that has to do with one's right to be apart from others. I want to draw attention to the link between that and the social contract that guarantees all rights. Without that social contract, my so-called right to privacy is really no more than a privilege that I maintain by might or money. I maintain my privacy through violence or through being able to pay thugs to maintain it for me. A right to privacy depends on a social contract, and I believe that when you see discrepancies in wealth increasing to such an extent that the term fellow Americans almost feels like an abstraction, then the social contract is under threat, and with it, a number of the rights that depend on that.
Here is that Mark Zuckerberg clip from the video presenting the company's IPO on their IPO roadshow.
Facebook's mission is to make the world more open and connected. And, you know, what we mean by that is that we think that people's lives are going to be better, and really that the whole world will function better, when there's more information and understanding out there about, you know, both big things that are happening in the world and local things, what's going on with your friends and the people around you.
The whole world will be a better place when it's more open and connected and there's more understanding and information about there about big things that are happening in the world and what's happening with your friends and the people around you. Does that make you cringe, or is he talking about something different than you're talking about?
Well, it doesn't make me cringe so much as perhaps considering the source of the quotation and pondering what might be the subtext of the quotation. When I consider the source of the quotation, I'm thinking to myself that here is someone who has built a multi-billion dollar industry by exercising his right to privacy, the privacy that he enjoyed in a Harvard dormitory, for instance, in order to create this product, the successful marketing of which gives him an unprecedented right to privacy, the ability to inhabit multiple dwelling places if he wants to, not just one home that he calls his castle, but, you know, five castles that he can call his home, and then turns around and talks to us about openness and sharing. I'm not against openness, but I am against coerced openness, and I am against openness as an unqualified value. When there's nothing but openness, the ultimate effect of that is a lack of openness. We're in a group, we're all open, we're all naked, we're all sharing, and the level of sham automatically rises because we know that we are not safe. I think of this radio program as an example. Here are you and I having a conversation. It's a very public matter. Mm-hmm. Your listeners are tuned in and hearing it. But it also depends on some privacy, the privacy in which you prepared for the interview, in which I prepared for the interview, and the fact that not everyone listening is free to barge in off the street and be in the studio, in which case no one would hear anything. So we'd have openness, if you want to call it that, as anybody who could make money off that would be pleased to call it. But what we wouldn't have, in fact, have is a chaos in which the lowest voices, the weakest voices, the shyest voices would be drowned out by people like me who didn't stop talking.
I wonder how that orientation makes you think about WikiLeaks. You describe your politics as being left of left.
And, well, left anyway, yes.
And you know, and yet there's a conflict there between people who support Julian Assange and WikiLeaks because they made open all these government secrets that were leaked to them. On the other hand, the State Department says it robbed us of the ability to have private conversations, diplomat to diplomat, in many capitals that are necessary for getting the productive business done, not just for hiding things. Have you thought about WikiLeaks in the context of your notions of privacy?
Yes, I have. And as often when I think about a question, and this may be nothing more than a defense mechanism on my part, I begin looking for the larger question that ostensibly hot question is obscuring. So we have a question about Assange and WikiLeaks, but behind that, we have a government that has cloaked itself in secrecy, even as individuals are encouraged to be more open with their privacy, which is an exact reversal of what the founders seem to have envisioned, a transparent government with individuals who had their private affairs protected. So Assange's disclosure, and I personally tend to be glad that some of that has been known, is now known, is really symptomatic of a much deeper issue. And those who are upset about it might ask themselves, you know, do you want Assange or someone like him disclosing information, or do we wish to do this in a manner that is more social and more progressive and more geared not just to his notoriety or to someone else's perhaps prurient interests, but to the welfare of us all?
You juxtapose privacy and privatization. Why?
I juxtapose it in my book because of an assumption that we naturally make when we hear words that sound alike, between thinking that the one always goes with the other. So if we have an impulse toward privatization in our society, that must mean that our privacy is going along with it on its shirt tails, as it were. And yet, as I look around me and see the increasing privatization of institutions that were once public, education, the military, the postal service, I don't see an accompanying increase in privacy that I've been led to expect I would see. In fact, what I see is an erosion of privacy. That's not to say that there isn't a historical link, and perhaps a profound historical link, between things like private enterprise and private property and the right to privacy, which have historically grown up together. I just think that we need to test those easy assumptions.
Garrett Kaiser, contributing editor to Harper's Magazine, contributor to Mother Jones. His new book is simply entitled Privacy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now we continue with our new election year series, That's My Issue. We've been gathering stories, remember, of how your personal experience has shaped your politics at WNYC.org/issues. You can write us your story, record your story directly onto your computer, and create a personalized badge that you can share online to tell everybody what your issue is via social media. Right now on the air, we'll do a call-in for anyone who has had an experience in another country that has shaped your politics. You can start calling in right now, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. What do I mean by experience abroad? Well, that can be a number of things. Perhaps you're an immigrant to this country, and your early life experience in your home country has shaped the way you view an issue here in this country now that you're here. Does that sound like you? We would love to hear about that, whatever it is. 212-433-WNYC. We can all learn from hearing your stories of that type. 212-433-9692. Or maybe you're simply a native-born American who has traveled abroad and seen something, or lived abroad and has heard a conversation that has shaped the way you see an issue here in the United States today. So give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. We'll take your calls in a minute and also play a clip of Mitt Romney describing an event in his life from when he spent time abroad that changed his perspective. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Your calls on this in a minute.